But the primary has to begin with understanding and assessing the uniqueness of the Prophet's relationship to his grandsons. Of them, he says that they will be the masters of the youth of Jannah. Sayyid al-Shabab Ahlul Jannah. Ashab, Shabab, in our tradition is not just a person who is 5 or 10 years old, but you are considered to be Shab if you are 40 or younger. That 40 becomes that age where you are no longer a youth. You are considered to be post that youth stage. And they are said to be the masters, the kings of everyone who is in that category in Jannah. And when the Prophet ﷺ deems one of his companions to be a person of paradise, especially those who pass away after his passing, to understand the depth and magnitude of those personalities necessitates truly understanding what it means to be someone who is designated and giving the rank and station of paradise even before they have passed from this world. There's no doubt that they won't go astray. There is only certainty that they will always follow truth. There's no questions, there's no concerns whatsoever that they are designated and they are made from a different kind of substance, that even after the best of creation, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, has left and companion after companion yielded to argumentation and quarrel, you saw Muslims killing Muslims. There were still people who were able to stay fast and steadfast to their values and virtues and not compromise. That even when he was gone, alayhi salam, they still lived lives that would guarantee that they were peoples of paradise. Hassan and Hussein were two who were given that designation, and not only that they would be in Jannah, but they were called the Sayyids of the Shabab of Jannah. And it's important for us to know this, because we have to know our history and we have to know the people who came from our history in ways where we can start to strive to build relationships with them and take their teachings for us to be guiding principles, especially when we have a vacuum in terms of our own values. The realities of Karbala should not be something that we segment into theological divides that allow for us to be only engaging them at simplistic levels. If you are a Shia or you are a Sunni, you have to know what took place at that time. And you have to understand that the individuals who were massacred and slaughtered on that day were not people that we are meant to have tangential relationships with. These were the children of the Prophet of God. And if we just dismiss it into, oh, you don't get it because you are a Sunni, or I'm not supposed to touch it because I'm not Shia, we're going to be the ones who miss out the most. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he has companions who come to him, women who say that we had a horrific dream last night and we dreamt that a piece of your body was taken from you and put into our laps. And the Prophet alayhi salam, he says that this is not a bad dream, this is a good dream. Perhaps it means that Fatima will be having a son soon. And then after, we see the birth of Hussein radiallahu anhu. We have narrations where the Prophet over and over and over makes dua for them. That he is standing on the pulpit and he sees his two beautiful grandsons coming towards him. And he descends from the pulpit to pick them up and bring them towards him, saying, I couldn't wait for them to come. We have narrations where the Prophet alayhi salam is in prayer. And he makes a sajda that is so long because his grandson is upon his back that the companions come to him in a state of anxiety and worry afterwards. And he says that there was nothing wrong, I just didn't want to disturb my grandchild. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam undoubtedly loved both of these young boys. They had a special place in his heart. And to understand truly what it means to be able to connect to the narrative necessitates us letting go what it is we've been socialized with and letting our hearts just be present. Because the Prophet ﷺ loved his grandchildren. And if that is not enough of a reason for us to also love them and to be able to take from them, then I don't know what would be. The brothers, please move up. When Hassan radiallahu an, after the passing of his father Ali radiallahu an, was now in a place where authority was meant to go to him, he lets go of it because Muawiyah was in a place where he was also looking for the authority. And Hassan radiallahu an, to spare the bloodshed that would take place if they were to go against each other and quarrel over that authority, says that I will relinquish it. Muawiyah designates his own son Yazid to now assume authority after. And in our tradition collectively, Sunni and Shia alike, there are many who understood that his authority was not one that was anything other than tyrannical. Yazid was known for being one who engaged quite deeply in the material aspects of the world. And when authority was given to him, he went to person after person and people after people to get them to make allegiance to him. The Prophet ﷺ's grandson, Hussein, he did not want to do this. He was invited to the place of Kufa, where the people had said, come to be with us and we will deal with this together. And so he goes, not on his own, but he goes with the men and the women, the children of his family. When the armies come with Yazid, they go to a place where the Kufans, they tell Hussein that we are not able to stand with you in this battle. 72 members, 72 people standing against an army. Conceptualize it in your head. And they stand on the dark, arid deserts of Karbala. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he knew that this was going to happen. He was told by the angels that there would come a time, it's in our tradition, that we have narrations that I'll share with you. Anas ibn Malik radiallahu anhu, he says that the angel of rain sought the permission of his Lord to visit the Prophet sallallahu ta'ala alayhi wasallam, and he was granted it. It was the day of Salama, and the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam said, observe the entrance so that no one may enter upon us. It was while she was standing at the door that Hussein came darting past, opened the door and entered. He began to leap and he jumped on the Prophet's back, and the Prophet began to kiss him. The angel asked him, do you love him? And he sallallahu alayhi wasallam replied, yes. The angel then said, your community will kill him. If you wish, I can show you the place where he will be killed. He sallallahu alayhi wasallam replied, yes. He then grabbed a fistful from the place where he would be killed and showed it to him alayhi salam, having come with reddish soil. In another hadith, Jibreel alayhi salam, he said, your community will kill this son of yours. And the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam replied, they will kill him while believing in me? And he said, yes. And then Jibreel brought forth soil and said, from such and such a place. Ali radiallahu anh, he said, I entered upon the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam one day and his eyes were pouring forth tears. I said, Messenger of God, has someone angered and upset you? What is the matter that your eyes weep? He sallallahu alayhi wasallam replied, rather, Jibreel stood with me before me and informed me that Hussein would be killed by the banks of the Euphrates. When he stands at that place, there is individuals who dare to even think of harming a hair of the grandson of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. A young boy who upon his birth, the Prophet made the aqiqah for him. He called the adhan in his ears. He did the tahniq, he put his blessed saliva into the mouth of his grandson. He gave him his name. But this is what the pursuit of the material does. And to understand the relevancy of the tragedy of Karbala to the new beginnings of Muharram is that we can look and focus upon the horrific tyranny of those who massacred the family of the Prophet of God. Or we can look to the example of Hussein radiallahu anh, who to the very end upheld his values and did not compromise in any way. to understand as we go into these days and we utilize the opportunity for reflection, to take from them only the unique blessing that the days of Muharram can put upon us, to understand and think for us and for ourselves first and foremost that here you have a man who is given the title of being Shaheed, not simply because he was killed, but a Shaheed is given the title of being one who witnesses, because through their life, through their example, to the very end of it, they're bearing witness to the fact that there is something that is bigger than this world that they are striving for. There is something that is bigger than the shackles, the distractions of this dunya. Something that they orient their values towards. Something that are their guiding principles. Something that are their morals. Something that is their sense of ethics. Something that drives their mindfulness. And we find this in the tragedy of Karbala, where we see Hussein radiallahu anhu to the very end being a purveyor of that sense of his values. You gotta think, these are the people of our tradition. And we see what motivates them and moves them. And we become paralyzed today. When anything takes place, what can I do? What can I do when there are refugees marching from Syria? What can I do when there are bigots and racists circling 20 masjids on this day of Jummah? What can I do when there is unjust occupation in the lands of Palestine? What can I do when there are people who are running for the presidency of this country, building their platforms off of anti-Muslim sentiments? What can I do? Can't do anything if you don't know what your values are. You can't do anything if you don't know what it is that guides your life. You can't do anything if you don't sit down and have a real, honest, introspective look and say, what is it that pushes me and compels me? The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was known as an honest man. Even before he was known as a Nabi, he was known as Al-Amin. Ethics, mindfulness, a sound sense of morality, his moral compass was never in a direction other than the one that took him close to the divine. And you saw how he passed on that sense of mindfulness through his companions, through his family. These were men and women who knew what they stood for, not just what they would die for, but what every day would get them up and go and live to the best of their ability. If someone was to ask you, what is it that drives you? Would you know? Something that you would sacrifice everything and anything for. Something that would allow for you to give up your sleep. Something that would move you and shake your heart to sacrifice and give yourself inconvenience for the benefit and convenience of someone else. What would you say? And how would you move forward on it? You're going into blessed days. And we have recommendations in our tradition. I would encourage those of us who are not familiar with the tragedies that take place in the month of Muharram to take the time to go and understand and read our history. And that's a Muslim history, not a Sunni or a Shia history. And to be able to relate and connect to every character that is there, and to understand really what are they made of, that they were able to move forward in the face of such atrocity, in the face of such challenge, and still say that the next world is more important than this one. That Allah is greater than all of this. That I will not compromise on my relationship with the Divine for anything of this dunya. It's for you and I to take from, not from anybody else. Listen.